Not had enough of me yet? Well, good news. You can now listen to William Hill's Upfront with Simon Jordan podcast right here. The series, hosted by me, gives you a front row seat to big name interviews discussing their career successes and failures. Sit back and enjoy.
So basically, the rules only, you feel like you're clean. So to this day,
as a world champion.
What more do I need to do to like not clean? But it teaches the younger guys coming under you that
respect.
I know that you're not bigger than the gym. I don't believe they should use the death of someone's parents or anyone to sell fights.
There's no substance.
Yeah,
there's
nothing in it. Not where they draw the line. Just it shows up what type of person he is. You know, he's just like a scumbag. My aim now is to be the best of all time.
Right.
Right now is GSP. His name is George St. Pierre. He's the best fighter of all time, in my opinion. So I'd like to beat all his record.
This is Upfront with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So with this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up to proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way. And more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode is one of just three UFC champions born out of the UK. He overcame violence in Jamaica and gang life in Birmingham before finding the octagon. His success came to the fore, winning the welterweight title versus Kamaru Usman in 2022, with two successful defences since then. A man who hasn't tasted defeat in 9 years. Leon Edwards, welcome to Upfront.
That sounds good.
Nice to see you.
Great.
Nice to see you.
Great introduction.
What we do when we're having these shows is we talk about the background of you and the things that made you and the things that brought you into the position that you're in.
Yeah.
But in this one, because a lot of the interviews that we've done about combat sports have been with boxing, and I have a real predilection to boxing.
Yeah.
And less so with MMA. So my views on it have been sort of well documented and smacked around by Molly McCann about the fact that I struggle with the sport and struggle to understand it and struggle to get the value of it or to appreciate the fineries and peculiarities of it, because I've always, in the times that I've been to see it, I went to see it, I think, in 2008.
Yeah.
And that may be very early. It may have morphed a lot then. Yeah. And I remember going there and Nuts magazine was sponsoring it.
Yeah.
And the whole auditorium was a certain kind of feel. So when you hear someone sort of like me say, yeah, I love combat sports, don't really appreciate MMA, don't really look at it from the point of view of having a great deal of value of it, find it overly brutal, and the wrestling component of it kind of changes the optics for me and the whole octagon and the sort of environment where it's almost like Nero says thumbs down. So talk to me about it.
I think for me, I can, from my part of view, just like, it's changed my life. You know, I think most people got the same kind of like views as you do. My mom certainly does. You know, she thinks it's a hard sport, and it is. So is boxing, so is any other sport that you want to do. You know, but like I said, for me, I feel like it's truly changed my life. I was going on a bad path in my life.
Yeah,
MMA like dragged me out of it, and now I'm able to become world champion now. And but like I said, it is brutal.
But it feels to me that it doesn't get the respect and kudos.
Yeah, definitely not.
That
definitely
clearly
not.
That the, if you're getting 2.5 million pay-per-views on a fight, which you've got, I think, with Conor McGregor and Khabib, I don't think boxing's get those sort of numbers.
No, definitely not. Definitely
and
not.
It's got this real feel of a sport that's growing. Do you think it gets the sport and then the cachet that it should get as a result of
no,
it?
No, I don't. I think it's like an old school mentality, right? Like you say, like Nux Magazine was sponsoring it back in the day, and it was like no rules back in like the first UFC one. It was like no rules and you could hit in the balls and stuff. But now it's been so like modernized, and you now got people that can like use it to change their life. You know, you know, got people like Conor McGregor, for example, that is easily crossing over to casual audience, and the kids now love it. My son does it. You know, I think it's a brilliant way for little boys, little girls to prefer jiu-jitsu. You can use jiu-jitsu with no head contacts, you're not taking no brain damage, you're just going there, rolling, getting about. And so I think it's a brilliant mixture of martial arts.
Why do you think then, if it's cutting through, because it's not cutting through so much in the mainstream. It's cutting through digitally, isn't it?
Yeah. I think slowly it is. It's cutting through slowly. In America, it's massive. You know, right. I think it's more like the British, for some reason.
Audience is taking time to get to it.
But yeah. it's slowly getting there. You know, I think, like I said, like loads of the kids now that I know are going into mixed martial arts more than they are boxing. When I was young,
why do you think that is?
Every little boy wanted to do boxing, you know?
Yeah.
I think just more, there's different martial arts, right? If you get bored of like one, let's say, for example, I get bored of doing kickboxing, I can go and do jiu-jitsu. If I get bored of jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. I can go and do wrestling. So I think it keeps your brain more busy and active, more than just like being by yourself in the gym, in the boxing gym, just sparring, hitting pads and running. You know, I feel like in mixed martial arts, it's kind of like a team sport. You need like a team to train. You need like a jiu-jitsu partner. You need a wrestling partner. You need a,
right, because so, it's multidisciplinary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It comes from multiple disciplines. So I feel like even though it's a singular sport when you're competing, when you're training for a fight or if you're training, it's like the mats is like 50 people on the mats at one time doing the same exact thing you're doing. So I think it's like a team thing that keeps kids more engaged, you know, and there's different cultures, different people that you're mixing with on the mats. And it's all about like bowing and shaking hands after you finish.
So respect.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So I feel like that's why the kids are more drawn to it, you know.
Do you think it's more brutal, Leon? When you look at the two disciplines?
I don't.
You don't?
As far as brain damage, if that's what you're going for, you know, I feel not really, because I feel like we've got a lot more grappling involved. We're not getting out of the boxing, you only can hit the head or the body, you know, so it's a lot of damage you're taking as far as like getting punched on your body and on your head. With mixed martial arts, you do get punched and kick, but you also got grappling involved. We should not get hit in the head. You got jiu-jitsu involved. You're not getting hit in the head. So,
because it's interesting, because a mate of yours, Darren Till, he thinks that it is more brutal.
Yeah.
His observation was, if you ask me which is harder to fight, boxing or MMA, I think it's boxing, because you've got 12 rounds of constant punches to the head.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say MMA as a sport to train for is just so effing brutal.
Yeah.
But you guys fight in the stage that you're now in your career, you fight five minute rounds.
Five,
which is still pretty extreme.
25 minutes, yeah, 100%. It's therefore, like I said, it's a lot of damage, you know, but you're not using as much as, you're not taking as much headshots, which is where the damage comes in as much.
Because of the wrestling element.
Wrestling, you can kick the legs, you can kick the body, you can, you know, so there's a lot of kicking involved. We're, in boxing, like Darren said, is for me, I find like boxing sparring harder than MMA sparring. Right. And that's because, like I said, there's constant beating the body, beating the head, and that's it. You know, they only got 3 minutes, so you can sprint for the 3 minutes. As MMA, it's 5 minute rounds. It's a longer round, so you get a lot more time to work. You don't have to like try sprint the 3 minutes. You know,
other guys that have been elite in their sport.
Yeah.
You're a world champion.
Yeah.
What's the difference? Why you got a welterweight? In welterweight in boxing is 147. Why are you a welterweight in 170?
There's less weight classes in the UFC, which is like lightweight. Yeah, like obviously but lower than that, but let's say lightweight, welterweight, middleweight. Yeah. As in boxing, you got like lightweight, light heavyweight. It's like, I think that's what put some people off boxing as well. Is a different, there's some different weight classes. You don't know who's champion of what, and so one man can hold like four belts and like it's like a pound individual that's separating you from the weight classes. As in mixed martial arts, it's just like, this is a champion. There's only one guy that got the belt and everybody else is contenders.
Is there a lot of strategy, Leon, involved
in fighting?
Yeah, in delivering outcomes. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. There's an art.
Because of the different disciplines,
There's an art to it. For me, I compare it to like using the body as like chess, you know, like especially for submission and for grappling and for striking. And it's the details that, for the naked eye watching it, you think, oh, these two guys are just having a row in a cage, you know? But I feel like once you train it or understand the art of it, is using your body as a chess. I'm trying to choke you out, for example. You're trying to stop me from choking you out. But we've both been training for eight.
So these are the kind of expressions that get me into the brutality area.
Yeah.
Cage, you know,
but
choke you out.
But the thing with MMA is that if I do end up getting your neck and choking you out, you can tap, right? I let go of you straight away, and that's it. So that's the safety of it. Right, yeah. Some people go to sleep if they choose to, but most, like 8% of people do tap, especially if you're going to like arm bar, if you're going to braid the arm or whatever. But yeah, obviously, it's like a
is tapping quitting? because someone made that observation the other day. Someone was talking again, bloody boxing.
Yeah.
But someone was talking about quitting on a stool.
Yeah.
And then they used tapping out in UFC. Do you accuse someone that's got a broken orbital and takes a knee and stops themselves in a fight because they're damaged? Right, and I think it was about Daniel Dubois in boxing.
Yeah.
And why don't you then say that someone that taps out because they can't take it anymore is quitting?
That's two different things, right? A broken orbital bone and you getting choked is two different things, right? Because
the principle of not being able to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And because ultimately, if you've got a damage, whatever the injury is in boxing.
Some people do look at that as, even MMA.
But you as a participant, do you look at it as someone couldn't cope with it? Or do you just go,
I think it depends on the submission, right? Let's say it's a choke. If, like, worst case scenario, you go out. That's the worst case scenario. But unless it's an armbar or like a shoulder lock or something that can put you out for like a year because you're going to need surgery after it, then no, you know, because like end of the day, you have to make money. There's a career path, you know. So let's say someone got my armbar, but about to break my arm, I'll be like, okay, you know, like you got it, like fair play. I made a mistake somewhere within the fight and you end up getting me an armbar or submission, you know, that I might tap from, you know.
When you talk to a lot of these guys, whether it's boxers or cricketers, and in this instance, it was Stuart Broad, the cricketer, who talked about the importance of the mentality in terms of what separates people is that it almost becomes, once you reach a certain level, it actually becomes 95%
mental.
And 5% ability.
I agree. I think that's the battle, right? It's controlling the mind. I think that's what separates the greats from the good fighters. And you got to think, you had to have a fist fight, basically, in front of like millions of people.
What does that look like in your sport, though? I mean, it's all well and good saying you control your mindset in a non-contact sport, right? But in a contact sport, in a combat sport, where someone's trying to inflict hurt upon you, what is it? What are the controllables? What is the mental approach to that?
The controllables for me is the work I put into the gym, right? If I study this opponent, I look into it, like it's been 10 weeks. I've trained for this one person for 10 weeks, two or three times a day. My coaches have studied him. So we kind of like got a gist of what he's going to do, but still you got the mentality as far as like, I don't want to lose, you know? And I think that's what drives you, that you don't want to lose, that you have to get up in the morning and get the job done, you know, get your training done. And but as far as like controlling my mentality, as far as I'm about to fight for millions of fans, the packed arena, and families at home watching me, so it's a lot to take on and to go have a fist fight with someone, you know. So I think for me, I just keep reminding myself that I've been doing it for a long time now, you know. I was reminding myself that, so like, everyone get nervous. Like, to this day, I still get nervous, but now I know I have to control my nerves.
Yeah, and, you know, and channel them.
Into a positive way more than letting it eat me up.
What is your mentality when you approach a fight?
I believe I'm the best, you know, and I feel like the work that I've put in confirms that I'm the best, and I think my wins confirms that I'm the best. Mm-hmm. So the more I win, the more confident I get, you know, and the more when I set out to become world champion, and now that I achieved it, that solidified what I was thinking. That you are the best, you know, but that comes from hard work as well, and what I've done with my team in the gym, you know.
Do you think the profile in the UK, because we're not seeing it land on particularly mainstream media right now, and we don't see it, like I do a show and talk sport, and we don't see a section. You'll have a section on boxing, but you don't see a section on MMA.
Yeah.
You see these numbers growing up, and you hear the pay-per-view buys on significant fights, and you think to yourself, well, that is quite significant.
Yeah.
Do you see the profile of it changing? And do you think the profile of it changing will come on the back of people like you? Because there's three people from the UK that have won a world title, of which you're one of them. Right?
Yeah.
Do you think the more that happens, the more it will move from a sport that has a lot of eyes on the prize, but isn't quite getting the profile and cachet that perhaps it should enjoy in the mainstream? You don't read about it on the back page of newspapers.
No.
You don't see it finding itself on mainstream media, as I've said. Do you think that will change?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like it should change as well. You know, I feel like having someone like me, Tom Bisping, that was able to capture the world title and bring it back to the UK, I feel like that will slowly start bringing it to a wider audience. That it's not just this, especially when you meet us in person. So just like normal blokes, you know, like, so like, as in back in the day, it's more like pub brawlers, you know? So I feel like the more we do, Hopefully that it will continue to grow.
And how you do it as well.
And how
I
you
want
do
to talk
it.
To you. I mean, I have to say, I know it's not going to be a very popular opinion. I find people like Conor McGregor a bit, and we'll get into him later on. And I think it's all about representation.
Yeah.
But I want to get into you now. I wanted to get the framework of MMA and the different facets of it and where it is and what its positions are. But I want to talk about you now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about you and, you know, your journey. You're in Kingston, Jamaica.
Yep.
Your father leaves the family unit.
Yeah.
Goes to England.
Yeah.
Then brings you over. There's a background with your father of a culture that is gang culture and the challenges that go with that.
Yeah.
And you find yourself in that space. And then you have an ultimate tragedy.
Yeah.
An ultimate, unbelievable tragedy, which is your father.
Yeah, gets murdered.
Gets murdered
in
Croydon, my old neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Tell me about this time in your life and what's going on with you and what MMA brought to you, because it would feel, without me saying it, and I'm going to say it, and you can then feed off the back of it, that MMA is almost a saving grace for you and takes you in a different direction.
So, I was born, like I said, born in Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica. To my mom and dad, she had me quite young. My dad at the time was the leader of the gang in my area where I grew up.
Yeah.
So obviously from a young age, I kind of like got the gist of who he was.
That was the way of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of got like the gist of who he was from how people treated me, right? Like how important it was in the community. And he then immigrated to the UK to obviously continue whatever he was getting involved in. And
he went to Birmingham.
He did go to Birmingham first.
Yeah.
And then it ended up in London somehow, remarried in London.
Right.
And then he brought me, my mom, and my brother Fabian to Birmingham to obviously get us out of the environment that we were.
Is he a fighter too?
My brother?
Yeah.
He competes in mixed martial arts as well. And brought us to Birmingham to try to give us a better life.
Yeah.
You know, at the age, I was about 10, I think.
Right.
He then sadly also got murdered when I was 13 years old. So I had him for like 3 years whilst I was in a new country. So I think at the time it was a lot to take on for a single parent just coming to a new country. Like you don't know you, like also know your ins and outs yet. Then your main source of income, which was my dad, was got murdered.
What kind of experience, what kind of effect does that have on you? I mean, your father gets killed.
Yeah.
We're all going to lose our fathers at one stage in their life, but there's ways to lose
them. Yeah, 100%, right? Definitely.
And this is the most extreme way, a very formative time in your life. What kind of impact does that have on you?
A pretty negative impact, you know, because I kind of went through a phase where I kind of like blaming the world for my problems, you know. And because I knew what it was involving, I knew that was an option in that lifestyle, what he lives, you know. And being born in Jamaica, I've seen death a lot of times, you know, especially being born in poverty. And I kind of obviously broke my heart. I went through a stage where I was kind of like blaming the world for my problems. And that's when I got involved in gangs in Birmingham. Yeah. And I went down a bad path following the same stuff that he wasn't getting involved in, you know. And that kind of like to 13 to about 17, is where I'll say, like, I went on a rocky road, you know, and my brother Fabian also was following me down this rocky road I was going down, because he's my little brother, so whoever I get involved in, he normally follows. And
because you seem, I mean, we've got this epidemic in this country of knife crime and gang cultures and all that goes with it, and you seem a very mild-mannered person.
Yeah.
To be in that life
isn't
a mild-mannered way of life, is it?
Yeah. Well, they said the most dangerous man in the room is a quiet man. The quietest man is the most dangerous man in the room, mate.
Absolutely.
I feel that's me.
The person that says the least. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'll
bear that in mind if you go silent, right?
I feel like that's me, but yeah. I feel like, because I've been through it, like, I know exactly what like, life is about. From I was born, you know, I've kind of like been in and out of it. I know what it's about. Been around it my whole life. So it's like, now just like whatever. You know, I don't need to prove my case. They think I'm like tough or hard.
Did
or,
whatever, I mean, your mother's very instrumental in getting you in to MMA.
Very.
I mean, rumor has it or legend has it that you walk past a DVD shop and above it is a gym.
Yeah.
And she's encouraging. Is that because she's looking at your life and seeing the challenges that you have, seeing a pathway that your father has plowed and what happened there?
100%.
And this is a way of getting you away. Is that what she thought?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. She said it. That was the, I think she like you said, she was doing it. Just keep me away from the street, you know, from hanging around the street with my friends and getting into trouble. Because at the time when I was younger, like I said, I lost my dad. So my mom had to work.
Yeah.
So now she's working. Now I'm home by myself.
Yeah.
Me and my brother, I can go out the house.
You're a latchkey.
Yeah,
doing it,
exactly.
By definition. Yeah.
I can go out the house. I can hang around with my friends and get into trouble, and that's what I was doing. So when she saw the gym in Erdington, UTC, that was getting built, she said, "I think she tried this out." But we thought it was a kickboxing gym.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was an MMA gym, and went upstairs, inquired about the membership. At the time, it was £60 a month. I know she couldn't afford it, you know, but somehow she did, and. Yeah, she signed me up, and I've been there ever since.
And the rest is history, to some extent. Was it an instantaneous penny drop for you? Did you walk into that environment and immediately get grabbed by it, and then the distractions of the other crap?
Let's be
honest about it. Getting involved in gang culture, knife crime, and all that sort of stuff is not the direction of travel that will bring a particularly productive life in the longer game. Was it an instantaneous sort of?
It was a journey for sure. For what kept me in the gym at the start was the positive reinforcement I was getting from the coaches,
right?
Which I feel that's what I was missing. At the time, I was getting in trouble from my friends, but I was like, oh yeah, that's like good. My friends telling me bad was good, right?
Yeah.
So when I go to the gym, when I was doing like while in my classes, the coaches come up and be like, you're good, like you should stick to it. You should. And as a kid, does that like keeps you like, oh, like
it's a validation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The validation that I was looking for. And
do you think? I mean, that I suppose the question is an angry kid, but when you look back and think about this young kid that's in a culture that's lost his father mm-hmm. as a result of that culture, and all the challenges that go with it, and a mother that's having to work to keep food on the table, and putting you in a space where it costs money to go to this and you know it's not affordable.
Yeah.
What's driving you? What is the psyche that brings you? Is it anger? Is it an outcome?
Yeah,
is it an opportunity? This is my way out.
Yeah. That's what it is. I feel like this is my way out. You know, I feel like I can use this opportunity to change my family projection.
Yeah.
So I feel that's what motivates me now, you know.
Even at that stage in your life, that's what you thought?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Even as a 17-year-old kid, you know, I thought, okay, maybe I can use this now to give my mom a better opportunity at life. I can give my family a better opportunity at life, you know. And that's what kept me get up in cold mornings and run. That's what kept me going
that's
to hard.
Driving force.
Yeah, that's a driving force. To this day, it's a driving force, you know, to leave my family better than how I came into it, you know. And that's my main motivation.
Was it easy for you to pull yourself away from the culture?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Like I said, all my friends was involved in it. I was involved in it. So it took a little while.
Yeah.
But like I said, the more I was into the gym, the more I did in the gym, the more I wanted to be there more than being on the street hanging around, you know.
Given that you've learned so many life lessons and it's changed the direction of travel for you, and the culture of it seems to be part of it, and the disciplines that it's required to be an excellent participant in it, what lessons would you take from that to tell your son about his approach to life?
Just saying that sky's the limit. Like, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And if you dedicate yourself to anything you want to do in life, you can achieve it. But for you to get there, you need to, obviously I'm a big believer in God, so you have to put God first. And you should also, a lot of hard work, a lot of discipline. It's going to take a lot of time, a lot of sacrifice. This is what makes a man, and this is what makes you where you want to
have
be.
Substance,
you know?
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So I, to this day, I drill it into his head. Cause I got a boy who's 10 years old. He does mixed martial arts as well.
Which is why I'm asking.
Yeah. He does jiu-jitsu. He does wrestling.
Yeah.
Would I want him to compete? No.
You don't want him to compete?
No.
Why?
It's a hard game, you know. Yeah. It's a hard way to make your money, and I'm taking all the punches for him right now, so that I can, like I said, put him in a better situation where he can then go on and do whatever he wants to do, you know,
and have different choices.
Different choices in life.
It's it strikes me as a culture in your sport, and the reason why I say this, and we're going to talk about the people around you and the inspiration that you draw from them. This is right, isn't it? That the gym that you're part of, has a culture about the way it expects people to operate.
Yeah.
And if you get ahead of yourself, if you get big time, they're not interested in having you in that environment.
Yeah.
And I like that. That seems to me to be quite unique. I mean, I think I've heard it right, that people of quite significant, or an individual of quite significant talent, has been turfed out of your gym because his level of involvement in himself and how good he thought he was and what he was and wasn't didn't fit in with the culture. What's that about?
Like you said, like my gym is, to this day, I still, like, if I'm late to the gym, so basically the rules are in the gym, if you're late, you're clean. You clean the mats, right? So to this day, if I'm late in the gym,
as
I'll
a
get
world ta- yeah, as a world champion.
As I want more than I need to do to like not clean. But like I said, that's a culture in the gym, right? And it teaches the younger guys coming under you that
respect.
I know that you're not bigger than the gym. You know, you're not bigger than what's going on here in the gym. And I feel like some people come to the gym, they're kind of like, they think it's all about them more than it's about the gym and the team, and we're all working to achieve this one goal, which is to be world champion where I'm at. And that we all got to, like, one hand washes the other, basically. And you have to be disciplined. You have to have manners. You have to, if you're late, you're clean.
It's a great culture, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like
it's a great culture.
Yeah, I feel like even as, like I said, the level I'm at now, I still abide by them rules, you know. And I feel like that's what keeps me grounded. That's what makes me more relatable to the guys in the gym. That, okay, if he's doing it and he's at this level, I can also keep the same attitude, whatever I'm achieving in life. I can keep the same attitude, be disciplined, have manners, like, and I can still be a great person. I don't have to, like, become world champion, become like a dick, for example. Mm. You know what I mean? I can still be a normal man, you know?
And I think that's a great culture.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's a great culture. How fundamental and how important is, and how do you go about putting together the team that work in your corner? What are the key things that make it work for you?
So for my team, I've been in my team since I started mixed martial arts. So it's been the same team, you know.
Just Dave Lovell, yes.
Yeah, Dave Lovell, my head coach. I've got obviously my striking coach, Henry, my wrestling coach, Camby, my jiu-jitsu coach, Brad. So these are all Birmingham guys that...
And what are these relationships like?
Well,
I understand that they're all responsible for different disciplines, but the communication, the reasons why you chose them, these are personalities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These are people that are going to produce the end product that you're going to defer to at times, it would seem, that you're going to put, to some extent, maybe your life in their hands.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a unique relationship. So when you were alighting upon these, what was it about these personalities?
I think just like blending with mine, right? They're honest with me, first of all, you know, like the one... blow smoke at me and just tell me that I'm great when I'm not great. Like, for example, if I go to the gym, if I have a bad performance in the gym, they'll tell me, like, today, are you tired or something? Like, they'll tell me for me to be the best me, you know? Yeah. Like, some coaches, could you pay them? They'll basically tell you what you want to hear, you know? So I feel like for these guys, because they've been with me for so long, that they see me when I lost, they see me when I win, they know my ins and out, you know? So I think that's probably why I keep the same team.
Have you had them all along?
All along, right? You know, I'll probably meet few like later stages, but no less than 8 years. You know, so I've had opportunities to go to America to train or other places to train, because I was like, no, I want to stay in Birmingham and train because this is my team. You know, and I feel like just like make keeping me accountable. You know, and like they're honest with me. It's like a family, you know. I feel like that's what I like.
In your space, given there's multi-disciplines and and different voices, how important is the dynamic between you? Is it this, absolutely, you are the sum of all your parts, and that without your trainers, you do not get to the levels that you need to get to?
Like I say, it's a team sport until it's time to fight for yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you're on your own.
Then you're on your own, you know, to compete for yourself. But before that, in the week, I'm probably training like 30 people, different people in the week, you know, just as far as like...
And that doesn't have mixed messages or mixed... I mean, everybody sings the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, because it's all about me, right? And all the coaches with banks of each other. So everyone's on the same ball game as far as like how we should approach this specific fight. You know, so each fight is different, how I approach it. And for me, what keeps me like not as bored is because I get to go to my kickboxing gym one day. I get to go to my wrestling gym one day.
Right.
So not just like in this one place.
So it's variety.
Yeah, yeah, in this one place for years and years.
But it doesn't
and
confuse the message.
No.
And because you're considered to be a striker, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so that doesn't, the wrestling side of the dynamic doesn't get marginalized in the pursuit of your strengths.
No.
No. And nothing compromises one over the other.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
all work in sync and they in all sync. Produce a coherent yeah. outcome.
Yeah, yeah. For a specific fight, for right? So it depends on who I'm fighting and what.
And is there a do you strategize each fight based upon your opponent?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so then you look at the balance of what's likely to win the fight
yeah.
and then put the emphasis on that.
On that, yeah. So maybe it's like, for this fight, I need more wrestling. So maybe I won't right. do... I'll put more wrestling up front.
Right.
Then all the coaches that talk like follow point, the lead, yeah. and then maybe it's a more striking fight. Okay, let's put yeah. a striker coach up front, and everyone like kind of like work around him to make right. sure that what he's saying is going to work, you know. And then the defense with wrestling and everything. So I feel like everyone like there's no egos, right, in my team. So no, like nobody cares about having front yeah. for this fight. That's you. For that
well, your
fight,
gym doesn't allow it, does it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm out. So yeah, I feel like we've got a great thing going on in Birmingham, you know.
So you now land in UFC and the dimensions are going to start to change now because yeah. UFC is real grown up stuff yeah, now yeah, with Dana's
yeah,
opportunities,
definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
But you lose your first pro fight in Brazil.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Heartbreaking. It's like you work so hard to get to this stage. Then you got to the mountain and then just fall off straight away. Yeah. In my head, this is what I'm thinking, you know, like, oh, like got to this opportunity that I've worked so hard for. And I lost my first fight in Brazil, and I just remember going there thinking, it's like a big stage, right?
Yeah.
The first fight, I'm like, I put all this pressure on myself that you need to win, it's your yeah. first fight, and sadly, I lost a split decision to Claudio Silva, the Brazilian.
Why did you think you lost?
I thought I won it, but like I said, he got the nod.
Was it a step up in levels that you weren't quite at that level
no,
at that time?
No,
it just was.
Yeah, just, that's what wasn't my night.
Right.
It wasn't my night, like. To this day, I don't know why I lost, you know. And the fight after that, I got like an 8-second knockout, which is the fastest knockout in
history. I know.
History.
So I was going to say to you, how damaging was it?
Yeah.
And the answer you know, was, I knocked the next fella out
yeah,
in 6 seconds.
You know what I mean?
So it's like, kind of been that damaging.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was what, 2011?
Yeah, I think so.
2011, yeah. Right. And I'm going to take you forward a little bit now, because in 2022, you fight... Kamaru Usman,
yeah.
But you've already fought him in 2015 and he's beaten you.
And he beat right? me, yeah.
There is this clip of you that's gone viral and the conversation that you have between yourself and Dave.
Yeah.
And this appears to me to be such a pivotal moment in that set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, and just correct me if I'm wrong here,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
in terms of it's going the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You lose the first fight to him in 2015.
Yeah.
You fight him again in
so,
in,
okay.
So well, you set
yeah,
it up,
yeah. yeah. So I fight him again in Utah. Yep. Salt Lake City is a very it's a high altitude right. in Salt Lake City,
so you're so, having to work hard
yeah. So that means the air is thin, so you're not getting as much oxygen into your lungs,
yep.
so your body can't function as much. And but going into it, I'm thinking, okay, I don't really believe in it, you know. Okay,
like,
if I'm fit in Birmingham, I'm gonna be fit wherever you put me in the world.
It's different, isn't it?
Yeah. I learned the hard way. So, anyways, I got the camp in Birmingham. I went out there about 10 days early just to try acclimatize to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But from doing studies after the fight, that you need to be there for like at least 6 months to like for your body to adjust. But Kamaru Usman trains in Colorado, which mm-hmm. is 7,000 above sea level.
Yep.
So like it's 4,000. So his body is completely used to the altitude. In Birmingham, there's like 100. There's nothing there. It's right. flat, Birmingham. So yeah, I went there. Anyways, I won the first round. From that, my body kind of just like, for some reason, shut down. I could think what I wanted to do. My body just wasn't reacting.
Couldn't execute. Yeah.
It wasn't reacting until the fifth round when Dave woke me up and be like...
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. But the physical... the fact is, it's the psychological approach to that is one thing.
Yeah.
But it's a real physical manifestation. Mm-hmm. If you can't get the oxygen into your lungs...
Your lungs,
you require,
yeah.
You're struggling, right?
Yeah, very.
And
yeah,
you're
yeah.
still having that.
Yeah.
But in the fifth round, you get this... Well, I can only describe it as a call to action,
yeah.
But which is an absolute concentrating of one's mind.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna read it for the purpose of just refreshing yeah. people's memories, which is
yeah.
sit down, you've got to get fucking lively now, Leon.
Yeah.
You're too down, you're letting them get control of you too much. You've got to get your hands going, stop feeling sorry for yourself. What's wrong with you? You're too fucking down, you've got to fucking pull it out of the fire, Rocky. Come on now. What does that speech invoking you that changes the direction of travel, because you're going into the fifth round. It's shit or bust now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You fought this fella before, he's beat you. You're fighting for a world title now.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is the moment that a 17-year-old kid, a 13-year-old boy, 17-year-old kid, all the background, all has been built to this moment. You're going to win a world title or not.
Yeah.
And perhaps be someone that doesn't win a world title. So you're here.
Yeah.
Right? That speech, some would say, I don't think it is, but some might say, well, that's a bit brutal.
Nah, there's no mucking about in that speech.
What?
That's someone that cares, right? That's someone that is been with me through the journey. So kind of like, he knows how good I am, right? So he was watching the fight. I was cornering him, watching the fight, and thinking like, what's going on with him? Like, he's not doing what he was doing in the gym, for example, you know. So just more just about, because he knows me so well that he knows how to talk to me, how to wake me up, and he kind of just like calm my mind. At the time, my brain was like trying to get oxygen. I was kind of, my mind was racing ahead of me, you know. So that, I think that speech just like brought me back into the moment and be like, okay, just calm down. Like you felt.
But it's a remarkable transformation, isn't it? You've gone out and knocked the fellow out.
Cold.
In the next round, cold.
Yeah, cold.
Yeah. Yeah. You just get the emphasis on there, cold.
Yeah, cold. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like that speech definitely helped. Yeah. It definitely woke me up. It definitely refocused me going into the fifth round, knowing that I needed to go out there to get the finish. I was down on scorecards. I needed to finish him, and that's what I did.
But take me to the stall. I want to go to the stall with you. And by that, I mean you're sitting there in the fourth round.
Yeah.
You know that the challenge that you've got is not that you can't beat this fella, is that your body isn't responding the way you want it to because of the lack of acclimatization.
Yeah.
What goes through your mind? What is happening at that moment in time that then propels you from being told that you're losing a fight, knowing yourself that you're struggling respiratorily, and knowing yourself that you've got one opportunity to rectify that?
Yeah.
Are you feeling beaten up at that time? Are you damaged?
No, not physically. I'm not damaged. It's more frustration with myself.
Right.
Thinking, you work so hard to get this opportunity. Like, it means so much to you, and it's slipping through your fingers. You know, and that's what was challenging in my brain going on. You know, and so when Dave said sit down, like, wait, what, like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? You know, and that kind of like, for some reason, kind of just like brought me back into reality. Like we're here now, and just like,
are you hearing? I mean, we're hearing the language, and people are going, is that a bit brutal? I don't think it, I just think it comes I think language gets used, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
what does it do to
really
you
hearing,
as a fighter?
I'm more like envisioning like my life, right? I mean, I'm envisioning my goals in life. I'm envisioning my mom. This is what I'm envisioning to like calm my brain down. Like, you need to do this for them, you know, and for that, and for whatever your why is in life, the why I want to achieve this goal. That's what I'm envisioning, you know. And obviously when Dave shouting at me, and just telling me like, calm down, like, just, you need to go out there and finish him. I thought, okay, just slow your mind down, just relax yourself, and go out there and get the job done, you know. And I was able to do that.
Do you feel like a world champion?
Yeah, 100%.
What does a world champion 100%. Feel like?
Me, I'm joking. just the cementing your confidence in yourself.
Yeah,
you know, it cements your thoughts that you had for yourself, that you are who you say you are.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what makes me a world champion. And the confidence, they say that your confidence grow once you achieve something in anything. It could be a business deal that you wanted to close, and
it's confirmation,
mm-hmm. You know, like, you are that guy, you know. I feel like that's what being a world champion does, you know. It confirms for your team that they're doing the right job. They confirm, mm-hmm. they grow. It confirms to me that I'm on the right path, so my mentality grows. So it's like confirmation, right, that breeds more success for the team and for me and for everybody else, you know.
You've defended it twice now, which in its own right has further substance behind it, and records attached to it.
Yeah.
Do you think, again, this does steer it easily into it for you, I suppose, because of the gym culture, but do you see yourself as a bit of a trailblazer?
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, I was, even though he hates when I say this, but even though Michael Bisping did win the bout, he won it from being in the States for like 10 years, then he won the bout. You know, I did it from Birmingham, which for me, I feel like it touches the youth in the UK different. Because then now they can believe that they can also win the bout from the UK.
Yeah.
Then Tom went on and did it from Manchester. So I feel like the more we were able to win bouts coming from the UK, living in the UK, I feel like that will only grow the sport more. It will only push the kids into it more. And so, yeah, I definitely feel like I'm a trailblazer, and I can see my influence amongst the mixed martial arts community in my gym and around the world, you know.
What do you want to achieve?
I feel like it's going to be my aim now is to be the best of all time. You know, I think right now is GSP. His name is George St. Pierre. At welterweight.
At the welterweight.
Yeah, welterweight. He's the best welterweight of all time, in my opinion.
Right.
So I'd like to beat all his record. Right now, I think he's on like six. His record is 16 wins in a row and like whatever title.
Because you want to run a 13.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, 13. You know, so
it's not going to be 13 unlucky, is it?
No. Never.
No, I don't think so. No.
Can't say that.
No, sorry, mate.
Yeah, so I just want to achieve all these little numbers I got to hit, and then once I achieve all my goals, then be the best of all time, retire and walk off to the sunset.
Yeah. The way that MMA gets promoted,
yeah,
and the obligations upon people. Let's start with you.
Yeah.
I don't think you like media commitments very much, or like, because I mean, first of all, you're a very intelligent lad and you speak very well.
Yeah.
So it surprises me that you have a sort of little bit of a resistance to the media. Is that right?
A little bit. I think it's more just about it's like doing 10 media obligations a day is what I don't like. Because by the time 10th one, you're kind of like burnt
that's
out.
That's what creates the juice.
That's what gets everybody
exactly,
gets it going. And, so I'm kind of trying to get a gist of it now. Like Conor McGregor, for example, he loves it. He's a great salesman and he can keep the same energy for every interview. Yeah. And for me, it took me a longer time to be comfortable in front of cameras. You know, it took me a longer time to be able to talk. And
well, you're there now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm here now. Yeah. I can relax and talk and can with different people, with different cultures and everything, you know. So now it's like, but yeah, it's my favorite part of the job, you know, but I know that has to be done and I get it done, you know.
Do you think, everyone's got to play the game. I used to hate the media.
Yeah.
This is an irony that I'm in it now to some extent. I say it's not about being in it, it's about how you operate whilst in it. That's
whilst
my get out of jail card. They're there, and media can be a magnificent thing, and it can also be a divisive thing.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful tool to be utilised to create what you want to create from it. Do you think in any way that maybe your lack of appetite for it in the past might have held you back?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Like I said, Darren Till, for example, he's a perfect example of using the media to prepare your career faster, you know? So I feel like, it definitely held me back at times. I can admit that, you know, but I feel like if I do too much, I feel like it's out of my shower. I don't feel comfortable with like shouting, just like picking fights, random fights. And someone like Darren Till was, and I feel like that was kind of, not his downfall, but it was kind of, he got pushed so quick that once you're at that level, now you have to like maintain fighting all these tough guys, and he wasn't able to like build his skill set didn't match with the way he was talking, if you know what I mean.
Well, you got into an altercation, didn't you?
We did, yeah. We're good friends now though, but yeah.
Fine, but what happened there?
I was just like ego, right? It's more just about I believe I was the best in the UK. He believed at the time he was the best in the UK.
Yeah.
They was pushing him as they thought he was the best in the UK as well, you know. So that was it, really. Just more about like who's the best in the UK, you know.
But didn't you get into a fight with Masvidal?
Backstage.
Yeah.
That was just I don't know. That's just a weird one for me. I don't like him. I've never. Never really liked him, and we got into like a little backstage brawl after the fight.
Right.
And
Do you look back on that with any regret, or do you go, nah, fuck him? He was what he was, and I told him, and I
definitely fuck him. That's the same energy. that's the energy. Even though we're like you can say like we'll work together, like you can say that, but the people that you won't like, right? And he's one guy that I don't really like, you know.
When it comes to promoting a fight, I mean, there's a lot said. right? Yeah. In promoting fights. And most sensible people know that it's a lot of brouhaha sometimes, hullabaloo, right? And people say things. And we've seen things like Deontay Wilder in boxing talk around saying things, I want a body on my record and stuff like that. And then we get into the territory of what was said to you by Colby Covington.
Yeah.
Right, which seems to me to be beyond the pale.
100%.
I don't know how you can process that. I mean, do you mind me saying what it was?
Yeah, sure.
Right, he talks about taking you into the seventh realms of hell and telling you to say hello to your dad.
Yeah.
Now, that to me is a beyond the line.
Yeah, that's like the lowest of low, right?
What was your reaction to that?
Just anger. You know, it took a lot for me to calm down. But initially, just like not where did you draw the line? Just it shows up what our person is. You know, he's just like a scumbag. I would say, you know, to use that to sell a fight when it's through that low. I think just show what type of human being you are. And I don't believe they should use the death of someone's parents or anyone to sell fights.
There's no substance.
Yeah,
there's
nothing in it. You know, I feel like. Anger, and it took a lot for me to refocus my brain and calm down and just believe that he's doing it just to draw me out so I can go out there and fight his fight.
I'm assuming Dave Lovell was a part of concentrating your mind.
I'm a mom as well. Yeah. You know, like obviously I had to phone my mom and I was like shaking with anger, you know, just for the fact that that went on. And obviously the UFC did a great job of keeping us apart, so I wasn't able to see him or get to him before the fight. And talking to my coaches, my mom and everyone, because just calm down and just like don't play into his hands, you know, like don't go out there emotional and start like scrapping with him because he's been playing to his game plan, you know.
But does it help? I mean, there's always this question in combat sports because it's business, right?
You don't
hate people.
No.
You've got there in your way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the business that you're in is stopping somebody, and the weapon that you do it with is with pain and hurt and inflicting people the desire not to be part anymore when they're submitting or getting knocked out as a result of it, or judges making a decision based upon that you were a better man in the five rounds.
Yeah.
But does it help to have that distaste and dislike?
It makes it easier to fight him.
Yeah.
It makes it, you look forward to hurting him, you know. I feel like it therefore helps far as, it gives him more that, like, I want to, like physically hurt you, you know. Like, so I think it therefore helps far as, like, competing-wise. Does it help for selling the fight? For me, no. Because I feel like you shouldn't do it.
There's a line,
I think there's, like, as a man, anyway, it should be a line that you just wouldn't cross. Like, kids, like, dead pet, like, relatives are like, that's not, in anything, even on the street, that's like, you don't do that.
I'm going to ask you about personalities.
Yeah.
I can't find myself. I'm going to talk about Conor McGregor. And I don't like what he represents.
Yeah.
He's in your sport.
Yeah.
He is a huge name, whether he's fighting now or whether he comes back.
Yeah.
His legend travels before him.
Yeah, 100%.
What's, and he is the ultimate self-promotionist, right? What's your view on him?
For me, I think he's great for the sport. I think he's therefore brought the sport forward for like to the casual fans.
Right.
He's one of these guys that you even like him or don't like him, you know. What he's achieved in the sport as well, you can't take away from him. You know, he did become the first ever 2-division world champion. Mm-hmm. You know, so but even though we talk all this shit, he is actually a good fighter as well behind it. You know, for the sport, it definitely helped the sport. It didn't take nothing away from it. It definitely gave more for us, like pushing it for the mainstream.
Because I just look at it and it's me being me.
Yeah.
I look at some of the shit that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And some of the things that he gets involved in.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't think it helps the look of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got people attacking a UFC bus all of these things, I think it hurts the sport. I don't think it helps it.
Yeah.
And I just wondered what you thought.
I'm not an admirer of this. For me,
coming to my world.
No. I'm judging him from the competitive part of it, right? The self-promotion part of it. His personal life is his
own business.
I'm sure there's other people that in boxing or in football that's doing weird shit, you know. Yeah. So it's like,
but I'm talking to you about UFC.
But for me, I couldn't give two shits about his personal life. You know, it's more just about what he's achieved in the game. Is self-promotion part of it, like, each of their own, like, that's what you want to do. That's, isn't that my mate? So, like, it is what it is, eh?
Dana White.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fascinated by Dana. I've seen him do various interviews.
Yeah.
He's a man of significant substance and great vision. He's been so instrumental in the direction of travel. I mean, what's your views on what Dana White's done? Because it's very unique, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we watch this mixed bag world of boxing. Do you like boxing, by the way?
I love boxing. I watch boxing on MMA.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
Which is weird, eh?
Why is
I don't know. Just like, I like the history of boxing as well, you know? Yeah. So, like, even when I'm in training camp, I kind of like draw from like the old fighters, the Haglers and the like Hearns. And because there's history behind it. History behind it. So I can like kind of see their path and stuff. So probably that's probably why I enjoy boxing more than MMA right now.
And people will do it in years to come about you when they're looking at UFC.
Exactly, exactly. So that's probably why.
But it's a straight, the reason why I say Dana is because he's really head cook and bottle washer.
Yeah.
He determines, he's created the format, he's created the structure. He is almost pivotal to how everything happens. Obviously in boxing you've got WBC, WBA, IBF, WBO, IBO, and you can go on through Alphabet City, can't you? But do you think it's, I know you're going to be careful with it because ultimately
are you wearing it?
It's your bread and butter.
Do you like him?
He's the best. But do you think there's a danger that it's a bit of a monopoly being created by him? I know we've got other scenarios coming in, you know, with the PFL
PFLs
guys
and
Bellator and people of that nature. Does it feel like it's the right structure, given that you've got a man picking who fights who decides who's mandatory, this works and who fights who and when?
A little bit. I feel like it does help the sport as far as like the best fight the best, right?
Right.
As in boxing, because there's so many IBOs and WB, there's so many different organizations that it's difficult to get the best to fight the best because there's so much business within the way. With the UFC, number one normally fight number two, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so you kind of get like you see more entertaining fights because all the top guys fight each other. We don't have to wait for like 5 years for them to fight, you know? Like, if you're number one, you're the best. You're number two, you're the best. Let's see who's number one then at the end of it. And so that's what I like about the UFC, that the best fight the best.
Is it transparent? I mean, is mandatory based upon merit or upon whim? You're saying the best fight the best, and that is an observation that's often made.
Yeah.
But there's also a perspective, because Dana is so omnipotent and so controlling that he decides what's mandatory.
Not really.
No.
Not really. That's not.
That's not how you see it.
That's not how it works. Like for example, number one won't fight number 10 because Dana says, you know, it just doesn't make sense for the division, you know.
But you just fought Colby Covington and he's number 7.
Yeah, but he's been in the UFC for so long. There's no one else to fight. So he kind of go down the rankings and think, okay, maybe number 2 just fought. So he won't be fit and ready to fight in April. Right. You know what I mean? So they kind of go down the list and see who's available, and who's in the South. Colby's in the South, because then come out and talk
shit. But as a fighter, you don't think, you're quite comfortable and quite clear. And obviously it's the hand that feeds you to some extent, so you will be. But you're quite comfortable and quite clear that the transparency, the validity, the authenticity and the integrity of it passes the sniff test. The best best.
Business, right? Business is business. So they're always going to put the best fights that make the most money also, you know. So, but normally in the UFC, I say the best fight the best. Number one, normal fight number 2.
A lot's going on in the world of crossover stuff. And obviously we're seeing it. And we've seen my mate Connor go in against Floyd Mayweather. And we've seen it more recently with Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
We've seen other stuff which I don't admire, which is Nate Diaz going in against Jake Paul and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion. Your opinion is far more important on this because it's your world, it's your space. What do you think about it? Where do you stand on crossover fights?
Did you think he beat Fury, first of all? Did he fight one? Fury? Francis and Fury? What was your opinion on it before?
I think it was nip and tuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that in the commercial world, Francis Ngannou couldn't win that fight.
Yeah.
And by that I mean there was too much money invested
in Tyson Fury. Yeah, invested in Fury to like for
in the world of boxing, I think it was nip and tuck.
Yeah.
If Francis Ngannou had got it,
yeah,
I don't think anyone could have been outraged.
Yeah.
And if Fury got it, I think you can just about swallow that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, definitely. That's probably what my thoughts as well. But yeah, as far as Francis competing against Fury, I think it shows that the higher level strikers in mixed martial arts can hang
they
with
can
the
translate.
Boxers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The YouTube ones is for me is a bit, I don't know, each of their own. You know, like I think it helps boxing as far as like for the casual audience, for the kids that's watching YouTube and stuff. I feel like that helps boxing. So, and if they want to get punched in the face to do it, then fair play to them. No, I don't think it's taken away from boxing. I think it probably brought more eyes.
Helps both, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it 100%.
Both, yeah, 100%. Definitely helps both for sure. But I feel like for like the younger generation, I feel like it definitely helps boxing more than UFC, you know?
Who's getting a better end of the deal between when you stick a crossover fight on and you stick a UFC fighter in there against a boxer? Which sport is getting a better end of the deal in your mind?
I think they both help each other, kind of. But if I'm watching it, I think it's more boxing being helped more than UFC. You know?
Do you think it? I didn't think it was a great fight. Not before the fight. I tortured Frank Warren repeatedly.
Why about, are you making it?
Yeah, it's a freak show. What you're doing here? Do you think that Tyson Fury, that Francis Ngannou was effective, or do you think that Tyson Fury underprepared?
I can only go off what Tyson Fury was saying leading up to the fight, right? Best camp I ever had, blah, blah, blah. So I can only go off what he was saying and what he knows. You know, like he said he was the best he ever felt, best camp leading up to the fight.
Yeah, but that's bullshit.
Yeah, but he knows. I gotta listen to what the athletes are saying, right? And who knows? I don't know. Maybe. Francis is a tough dude, man. Like, if you know his,
absolutely.
If you know his story and like his
backstory.
Yeah, like his will to win and the resilience and.
But you stuck Tyson Fury in the octagon.
Yeah.
And the other way around.
Oh yeah, Francis. Yeah, but that's because there's so many different disciplines within mixed martial arts. You know, that he probably wouldn't survive a round. You know, because we got.
That's my point.
Yeah. That's different.
In the Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. Floyd carried him for 6 or 7 rounds, and then when Conor gassed, that was the end of the conversation.
And that's
really what it should have been.
Yeah,
with Tyson Fury, you know, just boxing his head off.
Yeah,
rather than getting himself in a situation where Francis, we all know that Francis can take a punch, and we all know that Francis can hit hard.
Yeah.
So what you don't do is you don't let him hit you because your superior boxing skills. In the same way that in the octagon, in your view, that a boxer wouldn't even last a round.
Not in mixed martial arts, because there's so many different ways to lose, right? If you're great boxer, take you down and you're fish out of water, you're right? So it's like in boxing, cool, we'll train boxing anyway. Francis has been doing boxing for however long, you know, and he's a powerhouse. You know, he's tough as they come, and he's a powerhouse. So he would survive more longer than other around, you know.
For you, what's left for you to achieve? I mean, is there an ambition for you to fight at Villa Park?
For me, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's like a bucket list. There's like bucket list venues that you get in your mind as an athlete.
Are you a football fan?
Not really, a little bit.
Not really?
Yeah. Well,
would it be Villa that you supported?
Yeah, that's because when I first moved to the UK, I live behind the Villa Stadium.
At Aston.
Yeah, in Aston, you know, so I love to like, as a 360 moment, headline Villa Park back home, defend my world title. I think that would be, for me, like the icing on the cake. And I want to do MSG, Madison Square Garden.
You do?
Yeah, I want to do that. Yeah, I was meant to do it last
Want to do Saudi? November.
Oh, Saudi. They pay well. If not, go Saudi. So all these little venues, I love to like just tick off my bucket list and just go on as best of all time. That's my goal right now. That's what's driving me, and I get it done, you know.
Brilliant. Well, listen, here's the thing. I'm now going to spend my time watching your career. So good, I'm going to become, I'm not going to become an MMA convert.
You are.
I'm going to look out for you.
You are.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for being up front with me.
Good man. Thank you.
Up Front with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. Future episodes can be found on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.